Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. My name is Alex. I'm joined today, as always, by my co-host, one Jacob Negro. Jacob, how was your weekend?
It was good. Testing for the Pro Tour, mostly.
Yeah? Okay. What about Limited? How's your Limited prep going?
Well, pretty good. I was looking at, we have a spreadsheet of games, and I was looking at how much I've played. Here I can, let's see. I have played, we do it by games. So I have played 283 games of Modern and 258 games of Limited since I joined this team.
Holy cow, that's a lot.
That's probably
just you?
Yeah, wow. It's me since mid-July.
So how do you get all this data into the spreadsheet? You just have to input it manually?
Matt Nass has made a pretty cool tool that you just can, like, submit multiple games at the same time. You know, you just say, like, I drafted a blue-red deck on Arena, and I got this many wins and this many losses and things like that. Yeah.
Okay. Have you mentioned on the podcast who you're testing with? I don't know if you have.
I'm not sure either, but yeah, I'm testing with CFB for the first time. Which is pretty cool, I guess, across since I've been back on the Pro Tour, I had no team, team Rampant Growth, team System Magic, team Flex Slot, and now Channel Fireball. So I've not been, some of these have had the same people, but this is a team of people in its entirety that I've never tested with for a Pro Tour before, I think.
Right. So, yeah, that's pretty cool, man.
Oh, maybe Edgar Maguiege many, many years ago. I think I tested with him for one Pro Tour.
Mm-hmm.
So
That one time I tested a part of a team as part of a team for the Pro Tour, you know, it's a lot of much lesser known players than who you're testing with. And I was pretty grateful to be a part of that team. It's really helpful.
Yeah, I would say, especially given in the last 2 years, I went from trying to do it on my own, that having a team is better than not having a team, even if, like, I think it, you know, you have to sometimes trust yourself and trust your gut, but seeing other people's experiences is just going to be more data for you to use. Even if, just like hypothetically, if you teamed with people and you thought you were, like, the best player on your team, I think that would still be better than having no team, which is not how I've felt necessarily with my previous teams. But, you know, just sometimes there might be a big skill disparity, or you at least I feel that way sometimes on previous teams I've been on.
Yeah.
But I think everyone's input, as long as you understand how to kind of listen, engage what people are saying, it's always helpful.
Mm-hmm. Well, deck selection in Magic, regardless, is all sort of about filtering out information and knowing what's good information and what's bad information anyways. Yep. In a way, more information's good, at least if you know what to do with it. It's kind of funny that Edge of Eternities is the PT draft format. Have you, like, learned anything new about that format since you've played it so much, or is it just sort of like getting reps in at this point?
Yeah, getting reps in. There's some things that I think are interesting to learn, but I haven't noticed the stats changing in such a way to suggest that other people are changing how they draft for, you know, over a month now, it feels like. It kind of just seems like what people think is good has not been contested enough to feel like that's not the case. Whereas I guess Dragonstorm, Tarkir is a good example of this, where it seemed like after BK won Denver and LSV made a YouTube video with him, people just started taking all these Dragon Globe cards extremely highly. And then after that, it seemed like that archetype was super contested. When I drafted, I just felt like I should draft Mardu every draft. A lot of content creators I know were saying that, but not one as big as LSV. And it seemed like the format never sort of shifted from that.
Yeah, it is funny how that works. For me personally, I've ended up, I think I've done more sealeds than drafts for this format because of the directs and whatnot. Like, I played the direct this last weekend on Friday only because, I mean, honestly, I would have played more of it, but I ended up picking up a shift at work Saturday because at some point I read the arena schedule online, like the official arena schedule, and it just didn't have the direct on it. And I've been noticing that it's just been not having a lot of the events that show up on Arena, and then I'll open Arena and then I'll just find out that there's a direct or an open on the weekend. So that's pretty annoying.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a direct till I saw, looking at people I follow, like I saw Nassif streaming it.
It's like, oh. Yeah, it's strange. Something's going on with that website. I really wish they would fix it. But yeah, you know, so lots of sealed. I have done some drafts. I mean, my basic observations are, like, green is, at least on Arena, super overdrafted, but that's about as far as it goes for me. Do you like drafting the, like, white aggro decks? I've heard that's kind of a thing.
No, not really.
Okay. You just like green?
I guess... I probably like an upper half of archetypes, so I like drafting white, blue, white, black for like the only color combos I like drafting white with. I like drafting red, black, and red, green for like the only color combos I like red with, and I think those are like the two worst colors. I like blue, black, blue, green. Those are pretty obvious, but black, green I kind of have lower, and I guess that's it. That's already six out of like 10 possible two color combos.
Yeah,
but things sometimes are surprising. You know, you'd think black and green was really good, but I haven't been impressed with it, and I think that's sort of the same with blue and red, where like it just seems like it doesn't come together the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the gold uncommons matter. It's hard to evaluate those stats for the gold uncommons though, because like, are the stats bad on them because the cards are bad or because the color pair is bad, you know?
Yeah, or because people are splashing them. That could be a thing too. And yeah, decks with splashes always show up worse in the data. People splashing correctly a lot of the time. Yeah. Okay, well, on to what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to do our top 10 episode for Spider-Man. Is it called anything else, or is it just called Spider-Man?
Marvel's Spider-Man. That's what I see.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so top 10 Spider-Man. How'd we do for our top 10 of Edge of Eternities, Jacob? Have you thought about that at all?
I looked at it pretty bad. I already knew... I'd say the best card in Edge of Eternities wasn't on either of our lists, if I remember correctly, right?
Oh.
We talked about it actually a lot, but I don't think it was on our top 10.
Yeah, list. We both liked it, and neither of us put it on the top 10. Yeah. That's kind of a funny thing to do, huh?
Yeah, it's Quantum like we Riddler. Both realized while talking about it that it was actually really strong, and I think
yeah,
I was like, man, I wish I probably should have been in my top three at least, you know?
It's funny because it just looked like this big, dumb mole drifter to me the first couple times I read it, but I guess, I mean, to be fair, if you don't play it with Ephemerate exactly, it's like not nearly as powerful as it looks.
I don't know. I mean, we've got these decks in Standard really playing towards it. The Cauldron decks are really shifting towards playing it, and these prowess decks, people have realized it's great with artist talent. So there's these kind of more hybrid-y prowess profs deck that like they're doing the Is It Cauldron thing, but not as all in. They're not playing stuff like FOMO or Mako, and they're playing some more non-creature spells and artist talent and only, you know, like two or three copies of all these core Cauldron cards minus four VV still, I believe. And then, you know, some Riddlers, because if you have the Riddler warped or in, you know, hardcast in play and use artist talent, or just generally rummaging is kind of more powerful than even looting is. Like if you have two cards, if you have three cards in hand and you cast a non-creature spell with artist talent and a Riddler in play, like you get to discard a card and then draw two. And then if you play another non-creature spell, you do that again, you know?
I was wondering what you meant. Yeah, that is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it, I mean, consult the star charts ends up being really good too. That's what I have it as number one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I should have had Riddler on there too. And it's probably the best one. You're probably right overall. What else do I have? I had Helia. Card's kind of been okay.
Yeah, some modern play, if anything. You know, it lines up pretty well with Ocelot Pride. If you warp Helia and play Ocelot Pride, because that trigger goes on the stack every end step, regardless of if you've gained three life or not, you actually can get your cat token from the Ocelot Pride, gain another life all before that trigger resolves, and your Helia also needs to be in play, so also before the warp trigger. But you can just turn two, warp Helia, play Ocelot Pride, get a cat token, and draw a card, and still have Helia for later, which is nice, because even just next turn, you could play it and gain a life, and that'll trigger the Ocelot again.
Yeah.
If you can't get in combat with it or things like that.
Yeah. I had some +1/+1 counter synergy cards pretty high that didn't end up doing much.
Yeah, I had some boring ones. I had some pretty big misses. Anti-Causal Visage, definitely the biggest one, though people did try it a lot, to be fair.
Yeah, and it's like it's better than I thought it was.
Yeah, and then some misses on Lightstall Inquisitor, Lumen Crest Forget, which I kind of has a package for a white weenie deck. And then Cosmogoyf, people have tried in Modern in the ways I've said. Nova Hellkite has been part of those mono red decks on occasion. It seems like it's not good enough to play four of, but it is kind of doing the thing of just like, it's a lot of damage in one card.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a curve filler too, in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually played a little bit with that mono red deck on the ladder.
Yeah. I had Ice Tail Explorer up there, which surprisingly, actually, I've been seeing it in Modern recently from Eldrazi ramp decks that play some Ghost Quarters with Sowing Mycosponde to get.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm not sure that's going to stay, but it's something people have been trying. I know Nassif has streamed some decks that also are a bit more dedicated. I still explore decks, you know, with like Malevolent Rumble and just trying to hit eventually a Ghost Quarter with that. But also you can get a lot of value from your fetch lands.
Yeah. Yeah, that was on my list too. So, I mean, overall, I feel like we did okay overall. I don't know. We just missed,
Riddler. Yeah. That was the big miss.
Yeah. And had some other things that just don't see play. But to be fair, Standard's like, you know, in such a strange spot at the moment that like...
Yeah, and that's
it
certainly
might open up quite a bit if they ban stuff.
This list, because I don't have high hopes for Spider-Man injected into the current Standard format to change anything, to be honest.
No, but yeah, kind of a bummer. I was thinking the same thing because I wrote my top 10 list today. I think you did the same thing, and I didn't spend quite as much time as I usually do, although it is a smaller set. But nothing was really jumping out to me. I mean, there's some cool cards, but
yeah. So I really am thinking far ahead with this list, you know.
Okay, fair. It's funny, there's a lot of cards that like, there's a lot of little pieces for synergies that just, you know, they're in Standard but haven't been good, so yeah. It's a bit odd. So we'll just get into our list, but before that I want to remind everyone you can find us over on patreon.com/stockuppodcast. Thank you very much to all our patrons that we have at the moment. We've got one tier, it's $1 a month, and when you sign up for that you get access to all of our exclusive content. And, of course, you could also find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those places for free. So make sure to check us out there. All right. I actually forgot to put an honorable mention. Do you have any?
Yeah, sure. I've got one that I think is just really cool and maybe could have made my list, but it was kind of 11th, but it was too cool. It's Hydroman Fluid Felon.
Nice.
So that is blue for a... legendary creature, elemental villain. I'll just also stop here and mention a lot of the cool creatures in the set are legendary, almost all of them. It's pretty disappointing, to be honest, because when I think about their future in Standard, it sounds hard to build a deck around a card that maybe you'd want to put four of in your deck, but like it's just legendary, and this is a really good example of that. So anyways,
blue, it's a huge nerf. And real quick, a lot of the good cards that are legendary are like cheap creatures.
Yeah, exactly.
So it might be a bigger nerf than I'm even giving them credit for.
Yeah, actually, I'll take a side here. You know, there's the Esper Legends deck in Standard a while ago, and this deck had Rafine, and it played four of a lot of Legends because they were just kind of the best slot you could play and didn't really have room to maybe go down to two or three copies of a lot of its Legends. And eventually this deck became Esper Midrange, but for a while it was kind of more popular to play Esper Legends, so I'm talking about like Skrelf, Thalia, Enik, Rafine, Shieldred. That's like the core. Sometimes played four of all those cards I just said, in addition to some things like AO and Ludovic. And you know, Rafine sort of helped fix those draws, but like you lost to just drawing three of the same Legends like all the time when you played that deck. It was kind of a really broken deck in my opinion that like, you know, it was really strong when you just like went 1, 2, 3, 4. It was really good at like protecting the Shieldred with Plaza of Heroes and Skrelv and stuff like that. But yeah, it's certainly like the weak part of that deck is that you just sometimes lost to drawing a bunch of the same legend.
Yeah. There's so much to say about that, but I think we should just go on to our...
All right. Honorable mention.
Yeah.
Because I think it's super cool and it sounds like it could do something powerful, but it being legendary is like huge downside. There's no real upside to it. Hydroman, Fluid Felon, blue. 2/2, legendary creature, elemental villain. Whenever you cast a blue spell, if Hydroman is a creature, he gets +1/+1 until end of turn. So kind of prowess for blue spells. At the beginning of your end step, untap Hydroman. Until your next turn, he becomes a land and gains tap, add blue. So on your opponent's turn, it is an untapped blue. It won't have summoning sick because he's not a creature. So like if you play this on turn 2, you can spend that blue mana on your opponent's turn even.
Pretty cool card. I actually have this as number 10.
Okay, cool.
It's just a blue mana creature. I thought it was really unique. Being a legend hurts for sure.
Yeah.
Because it's because it's blue, and it's kind of specialized, you really almost would want to build your deck around it, but then it's legendary, so.
Yeah, you want to put ops and considers or spell snares and spell pierces, all the stuff that, you know, you could play as soon as you play them. A mana rock, for instance, kind of, but also a threat on your turn. It reads like it could be really powerful in kind of a blue prowessy deck, but it just, I don't think it...
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could configure your deck to where you just play 3 or 4 and you just suck it up.
Yeah, maybe.
But, yeah, okay. Well, so that's my number 10, and I didn't do an honorable mention, so if you want to go on to your number 10.
All right, my number 10 is Arachne, Psionic Weaver. It says 2 and a white for a legendary creature, spider human hero. It's a 3/3 with a new mechanic, web slinging, for a white. So web slinging is a new mechanic that will have a cost associated with it that changes from creature to creature. And this says, you may cast this spell for white if you also return a tapped creature you control to its owner's hand. So kind of similar to Ninjutsu, but on this card, it doesn't have flash or anything. So, you know, you have to do this your second main phase, or if you had a mana dork, your first main phase. Anyways, as Arachnite enters, look at an opponent's hand, then choose a card type other than creatures. Spells of the chosen type cost one more to cast. So kind of a taxer thing, but you know, if you were playing a white aggro deck, you could play a one drop, attack with it, play this in your second main phase and like replay that one drop and tax maybe your opponent's play. It doesn't let you pick creature though, so if they're just playing in, you know, a creature based deck, it might not be that effective, so maybe more of a sideboard card.
How much do you think, like, other than creatures is, or, well, okay, so it, my the obvious like comparison is Athalia. But you only get to choose one thing, and that one thing can't be creature. So it's like you pick instant or sorcery or planeswalker or whatever. How much worse do you think
that is? I guess this card does kind of read as like worse than Thalia to me. It's bigger, and maybe you can squeeze it in to be a little bit cheaper. You know, it's kind of a shame that the Luminarch Aspirant, or not that, the 1-mana 2/1 from Edge of Eternities, Lifespell Inquisitor, has vigilance, because that would be so amazing to like the curve I just described, you know, to kind of pull off.
Do you think there's a chance that they did that on purpose?
I don't know. It seemed like Vigilance was on the previous card just because of Station. So it looked like a significant upside.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, because it's a small set, I consider this card too. It just seems like it's hard to get it to work the way you want it to work when you need it, maybe. It might be.
Yeah.
You have to, like, attack, or you have to have, like, the right kind of creature.
It's also worth noting, you do get to look at their hand first, so if they do have a non-creature spell, you get to pick the right one.
Yeah, that is pretty nice.
Miss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see this card being good. Because the web slinging is only one mana, it might... One of the few cards that might have a chance in a format, not just standard. At least in theory.
Yeah, and... More interesting with, I don't know, something like Siren Spyglass, maybe. Just anything with an ETB also you could start abusing with this.
Right. And then all the web slinging things in general, mana creatures come to mind really quickly, and we have Llanowar Elves in standard, but
yep,
there's better ones in older formats, and you can play more than four.
Yep.
So it's something to consider. My number 9, Spider-Punk.
Nice.
So... this is 1 and a red, 2/1 legendary creature, of course. Okay, another aside, what's with all these spiders? How come Spider-Punk distinctively different than Spider-Man, or did Spider-Man just get a guitar?
Okay, see, I asked you this question before, and now I'm gonna... So, Spider-Man has a bunch of multiverse Spider-Mans that are all effectively Spider-Man within their own universe. Spider-Punk, I believe, is effectively a Spider-Man. I'm not certain about Arachne, but I would guess if it's a legendary creature, spider human hero, it's a Spider-Man. So when I ask you how many of your top 10 are Spider-Man, that's what I mean. How many are legendary creature, human spider hero?
Yeah, a few. Well, not that many. Okay. Certainly my top 20 was a lot.
And then some of them, I guess, also flip into a spider, and they're not spiders on the front half, but those count.
Right, too. Right. Oh, well... What if, does the gender matter?
Yeah, Spider-Man.
Okay, yeah, I've got more then. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Funny. All right, back to Spider-Punk. 1 and a red, 2/1. Riot. So that's the keyword that this creature enters with your choice of a +1/+1 counter or haste. It says other spiders you control have riot. Spells and abilities can't be countered, and damage can't be prevented. So this is the second little creature in a row that they've just tacked a ton of abilities on, which is kind of funny. And I think probably, you know, Riot's kind of nice on this. I'm guessing out of the other abilities, the most impactful one, or if it's good, then this card will be good, is probably other spiders you control Riot. That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
At least for, like, maybe standard. And then maybe in spots like spells and abilities can't be countered might be a decent sideboard option. I mean, Voice of Victory has proved to be a really good card, and this is like a slightly worse version of that, but in a different color.
The can't be countertext applies to ward too, so if your opponent is playing with ward creatures, then you can ignore the ward.
Yeah, so it's like kind of having a No More Lies in play, or not No More Lies, Nowhere to Run in play a little bit.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, this is my number six. Cool. It's certainly optimistic that, you know, there would be, I doubt there's going to be like other sets of spiders, but there is a lot of kind of on rate aggro spiders in kind of the Naya colors in the set. So I'm wondering if a deck might come together.
Yeah. And maybe it's not super dedicated spiders, but if it just has enough of its cards that are spiders.
Yeah. In multiples, you know, this card is legendary, but the other spiders you control have Riot is actually something that will still work in multiples. You'll still have to legend rule Spider Punk, but if you play a second copy, it'll have two instances of Riot. So you could give it a counter and haste or two counters. The second copy will at least be a little better.
It's not nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What do you got for your nine?
My number nine is Heroes Hangout, which is also a red card. It is a single red sorcery. Choose one. Date night. Exile the top two cards of your library. Choose one of them. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card. Or Patrol Knight. One or two target creatures each get +1/+0 and gain first strike until end of turn. So I really have Emberheart Challenger in mind with this one. Just, you know, can kind of, in a deck where you haven't drawn your Challenger, can cycle, but you could also give it first strike to maybe get in a significant amount of damage or target two of them. Pumping power, you know, sorcery speed would be a lot better if Heartfire Hero is in standard. I would probably have this higher on my list.
The martyr Heartfire Hero died for the sins of others. So I put this as number six on my list. So
okay, so we traded.
Exactly switched. That's funny. Yep. It seems to me that this card probably will be good. It's like cheap enough. It's got this filtering thing in red that's a little unusual. Yeah. But since it's only one red mana, I again, you know, agree. The two drop Prowess Mouse is a pretty big deal with this card. But all the mono red decks kind of want to play that anyways.
And yeah, they moved away from it recently, but this is kind of a push in the right direction, especially because Monstrous Rage is banned too.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, if there's a world where Rage is banned, but Heartfire Hero is not banned, I would expect this card to see like 4x play in mono red.
The deck that One Orlando had four of the two drop mouse.
I must have not been paying enough attention. I saw some lists were kind of moving towards less mice, I thought, but maybe I'm a little out of touch.
Yeah, it's still at four, and it, you know, it had some lizards, so then it also played their red land.
Yeah.
To give it some utility there. But yeah.
Okay. So, I see.
Cool card. Yeah, I played that deck a little bit on the ladder. It's pretty good.
Nice.
Let's see. I guess I'll read my number eight, huh? So I've got Gwen Stacy.
Okay.
Does this count as a spider? Spider human hero?
No, not always. Well, actually, let me see. Does it?
It's a spider on the back. So, like, yes, for your, is it a Spider-Man? Yeah. So, Gwen Stacy, 1 red, 2/1. When it enters, you exile the top card of your library. You may play that card for as long as you control this creature. And it's got one of these new mechanics where it's a double face card, and it has transform on the front. So you can pay the mana cost of 2 blue, red, white for this card to transform it. And alternatively, from what I understand, you can also just pay that cost from your hand to get the backside right away.
That's my understanding too, yeah.
Okay. So you can pay the 1 in the red and get the creature and transform it, or you can just pay the 5 to get the other side, and the other side is Ghost Spider, 4/4, Flying Vigilance Haste. Whenever you play a land from exile or cast a spell from exile, put a +1/+1 counter on Ghost Spider, and then it has remove 2 counters from Ghost Spider. Exile the top card of your library. You may play that card this turn. So my favorite part about this card, I've got a couple of these transform cards on my list, and I'm valuing highly the ability to play either half from your hand. The transform is nice. It's definitely an upside, but mostly I'm looking at the kind of modality of this card.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Whereas, you know, big flying haste dragon type things have been good in standard, but sometimes they're a little clunky, and so being able to just run out a two drop where that kind of replaces itself some of the time seems pretty good.
Yeah, and it's moderately threatening as long as you're in the type of deck that can flip it, right? Like, first of all, they have incentive to kill it because you might draw the card off it, or, you know, you might be able to play the card off it the same turn as you play this, but if you just run this out turn two, You know, if it dies to a one mana removal spell, that's not a great exchange, but you know, it still at least was threatening enough to kind of demand that, because it can either transform or at the very least give you the card.
Yeah, and you know, it's cheap enough that that sort of thing isn't a huge downside. And then the backside, it's a little odd. You're pretty incentivized to build around it a little bit with other cards you put in your deck, so you can actually get these counters and do some things with it. It's odd that you have to remove two counters just to exile one from the top of your library. So that's not too great. But of course, you're still getting like the dragon flying vigilance haste, so can't expect too much, I guess.
Interestingly, with Spider-Punk and this kind of whole cycle of flipping Spider-Man cards, is the front half isn't a spider. So you'll miss out on Riot if you cast the front half, but if you do cast directly the back half, it should have Riot. This one already has haste, so you'd pick the counter every time, which is at least halfway to the, you know, I could see those two cards being in the same deck, for example.
Right, yeah. And then I'm assuming when this transforms, it doesn't get exiled. So like, because it says this creature on the front, so I'm assuming you can transform it and have not played the card yet and can still play it.
Oh.
So it could be a way to get another counter.
Yeah. No, that makes sense too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm assuming that's why it's worded like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like this card. It's got cool art. I don't it's funny, I just don't love like the theme of the set that much, and I kind of really like, I've looked at some of the Through the Omen Path cards, and I kind of really like those. I'm like, oh yeah, Magic is cool when they do their own universe thing. This is one of the cards that I do like, this Gwen Stacy and some of the others. So yeah. What are we on? We need your number eight.
My number eight is Scarlet Spider, Ben Riley. So this is one red green, legendary creature spider human hero, 4/3. Also with web slimming, this time for red green. So you can pay red green and return a tap creature to your hand to cast this. It has trample, and it has, if Scarlet Spider was cast using web slinging, he enters with X +1/+1 counters on him, where X is the mana value of the returned creature. So this is, I guess, sort of the ideal of this like card I was looking at, maybe this Naya or Red Green Spiders deck. Notably, you could play a Lanner Elves on turn one, like you described. On turn two, you could tap the elves and cast this. And I mean, that's a 5/4 trample on turn two. It's pretty large. Trample's a big deal when you're just talking about stats too.
Mm-hmm.
Could fit it in with other spider type stuff. You could return Gwen Stacy, maybe, if you get it tapped.
Yeah, it's pretty huge. It works nicely, you know, another good thing to give Riot. You just have a big guy in your hand, you know, you can't do the web slinging or whatever. It is kind of just a big dumb guy, but I guess it's kind of perfect for like a spider aggro deck, if that's a thing.
Yeah, and I don't know, just you could also, there's a one drop spider that didn't make my list that wants you to attack with two or more spiders, but you know, you could attack with that on turn one and web sling this on turn two off that too.
Is it good with Nova Hellkite? You could make it huge.
You could make it huge on turn five. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly some spots you could make it huge. That's true.
Uh-huh. I mean, your Hellkite's going back to your hand anyways. I mean, you could have the Hellkite in play, but yeah, you might as well have a giant trampler and then the Hellkite in your hand still to get the trigger. I could see this. How much of the web slinging do you think people would build decks around trying to like bounce value creatures?
Yeah, that sounds a little harder in red green, but it might be possible. With the first card on my list, I was thinking of like Novice Inspector, but that's pretty slow. So then I switched to a Spyglass Siren because that's a little bit easier to pull off too, because a 1/1 flying is, you know, almost, if there's a reason, it's in the Kaido Enduring Curiosity deck, uses it for the exact same reason pretty much. So
yeah, totally. Okay, so number seven for me, I've got Morlun, Devourer of Spiders, X black. Another legendary creature, not getting away from those from this set. It's a 2/1 lifelink, and Morlun enters with X +1/+1 counters on it, and when it enters, you deal X damage to target opponent. So, very flexible card, a little bit of like a Siege Rhino. If I dare invoke Siege Rhino in 2025, I'm pretty sure they could give us a Siege Rhino, it wouldn't be very good. But I like how flexible this is. Obviously, it goes in a pretty narrow selection of decks, costing black, and you know, being a creature and all that. But it seems like it's a pretty potent anti-arrow card, and maybe it gets relegated to the sideboard. Although, I don't know. I hear in Pioneer that some wackos play with that black 2/3 lifelink death touch creature. So maybe you could main deck this guy.
Yeah, it's pretty, I guess, unique for a mono black thing. I'd certainly want to play it in a deck. Like, I'm thinking about like some way of generating a lot of mana, which black sometimes can do. In standard, there's not really anything that comes to mind, but you know, if there was like a Nykthos or a Cabal Coffers ripoff type card in standard.
Yeah, those sound nice. I mean, so people do play like lots of black midrange decks, mostly on the back of Unholy Annex.
Right.
And, you know, they're playing a long game. They're going to get a lot of lands into play at some point. This seems pretty good there. And, of course, they could always just run it on turn two to gain some life if they need to kind of offset their Annex or whatever.
Yeah, as a blocker or a threat. Yeah, okay.
So that's what I got.
Gotcha.
Yeah. You must have looked over this one. You don't sound too impressed.
Yeah, it didn't make my list of cards I cut from. Gwen Stacy did, but...
Okay. Fair enough. All right, what do you got?
This is number 7. Mine is Eddie Brock, which is also one of these transform cards, though not a Spider-Man, because it transforms into Venom.
Symbiote. Yeah, he's a bad guy. Bad spider.
Yeah. Two and a black for a 3/3 legendary creature human hero villain. When Eddie Brock enters, return target creature card with mana value 1 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, and then you can pay 3 black, red, green to transform it, or you could cast it for that cost 2 to cast directly to the backside, which is Venom Lethal Protector, which is a 5/5 menace trample haste. When Venom attacks, you may sacrifice another creature. If you do, draw X cards. Then you may put a permanent card with mana value X or less from your hand onto the battlefield, where X is the sacrifice creature's mana value. Kind of a lot of the same story you had with Gwen Stacy. I just kind of think the front half, if you set it up correctly, you know, we've got these Sephiroth decks that I think would kind of set this up perfectly, where you're playing these one drops that when they die, give you like a small body, and returning that seems kind of valuable. It's legendary. I don't know if I'd play 4 of that effect, but you know, you can, if you have a sack out in play already, then like you get to like sack your one drop, play this, get the one drop, sack it again, things like that. I mean, you could sack this too, and then I would certainly be interested in flipping it, because I mean, 5/5 menace trample haste is already, you know, it's not something you'd just play in standard for 6 mana, but it's a decent upside to your other card here, and the attack trigger is going to happen a lot because it has haste.
I like this card.
Yeah.
I again like it with the Sephiroth. I don't think you would play as many as you like Sephiroth. You definitely want 3 or 4 in this style of deck. This guy might be like 1 or 2.
Yeah,
I will say these legendary flip cards, I'm pretty sure that you could have one on one side and one on the other.
Yeah, that's true. You could. So
that's a pretty nice
way. And also, I mean, I guess if you're the type of deck sacking creatures, maybe it being legendary wouldn't be so bad, because you could just sack this guy and play another one.
Yeah, I cut this guy from my list last minute because, who knows why, honestly. I guess I don't love the backside as much.
Yeah, it's the sack and draw thing is kind of whatever. You'll probably sack a one drop and maybe one drop off the draw, you'll put that into play. But it's a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's another, have like the Sephiroth emblem or something weird, maybe you close out the game with it.
Yeah. Definitely. The power level for this set seems relatively flat, so
yeah.
I'm not like that offended that if I have a card on my list that you left off or things like that. Yeah. But so my 6 was Heroes Hangout. Your 6 was Spider-Punk.
We're on 5.
So 5, I've got Jackal, Genius, Geneticist. I'm only saying it so slowly so I can have time to scroll through it. Which I gave away my secret. All right. Green blue for a 1/1 trample. So 2 mana, 1/1 trample. Whenever you cast a creature spell with mana value equal to Jackal's power, copy that spell, except the copy isn't legendary. Then put a +1/+1 counter on Jackal. So people have been playing these green blue kind of aggro decks in standard that have kind of impressed me, to be honest. Especially since they're green blue aggro decks. And they have a decent like curve of creatures, and it seems like this would fit really well in that sort of deck.
I guess I wasn't thinking that it already kind of had a home. It's definitely a sweet card.
You know, it does start off a little weak when you play it, so I'm a little worried about that. But if you have like a Siren or an Elf or whatever,
yeah, that deck already has both of those, right?
Yeah, to get it up to 2, I mean. This isn't limited to once per turn either, so in theory, on turn 3, you could play a 1-drop and a 2-drop and really kind of go off.
Yeah, or I mean, it's really good friends with Lanoroth because you could play this and a one drop on turn two.
There you go. Yeah, that could be really nice too.
Yeah.
Looks a little finicky maybe, but I think it's probably less finicky than it looks. And it's got trample, so once it actually gets kind of big and maybe you can't really use its ability anymore, it still should be pretty good. Although, I mean, sometimes it'll have four power and you'll have an Ouroboros in your hand. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, and it's got trample, so once it gets to the bigger numbers too, like you said, it's not a big deal if you're missing.
Yeah.
That also has mostly a Curiosity, which is a fun four to copy too. Though I guess it won't come back if it dies, but...
No. But yeah, it and maybe it's a little narrow in what you could do with it, but that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, so, well, that makes sense.
I'm sorry to put it up pretty high on the list. What do you got?
I have Spectacular Spider-Man at number five.
Which one is this?
This is the one with a million different arts.
Okay, I like all those different arts.
One in the white.
All right.
For a legendary creature, Spider Human Hero. It's a 3-2 flash. You can pay one generic mana to give it flying until end of turn. You can also pay one generic mana and sacrifice it to give creatures you control hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. It's kind of a simple card, but 3-2 is a real big selling point here to me. Just kind of a lot of things going on for a cheap card.
Yeah, it's a rate monster. I had this on my list, and I cut it last minute because it's a little boring.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be honest. But
the saving thing really, I think, pushes it. You know, you're trying to play an aggressive deck that, you know, you flash this in, and maybe if you have a spare mana, you give it flying, or if the board's stalled out. You know, a white aggro deck, I guess. I just think both of these activated abilities are kind of exactly what you're looking for in a lot of spots, where like you just need to either find a way to push in damage, especially because white decks might have a good way to like pump this guy. Maybe you'll have just an anthem in play or something that's granting +1/+1 counters or equipments. And then, yeah, saving your team from a sweeper, it just sounds kind of like exactly what a white aggro deck would want.
Yeah, it sounds like the perfect white weenie card. I don't know if white weenie is even close to being good.
Yeah, standard. I agree. It's going to be an eternal problem, but they keep pushing cards that I feel like would be really good in white weenie, and this one doesn't really care about being a spider or anything either, you know, and I think they've made a lot of cards that maybe look like this card, but they're just like not 3 power for 2 mana, which is a great like part of it.
Right, yeah. Like, I could easily see this being in the Sorter deck that's like a blue-white flash deck with Curiosity.
Yeah.
Might be a little hard to justify that as long as Kaido's around.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And, you know, also, that hypothetical deck is currently missing Hollowed Fountain. Maybe that'll get rounded out in the near future.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. 7 different arts for this card. Crazy.
How many?
They're kind of cool.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I don't know, there might be more. Just
how many Spider-Mans does that count as in my top 10? I don't think
I guess you could count it as 7 if you're trying to win something. I think you might win if you get less in your top 10, though.
Oh, okay.
I think that might be who wins. All right. What do I have? On to number 4. All right. I've got the Soul Stone.
Okay.
Which, this might be kind of silly because people are only ever going to put 1 in their deck. But
it's my number 3. It's very boring. I agree.
Okay. All right. Yeah. The Soul Stone. 1 in a black. I mean, too, it's flavor-wise and whatnot. It's cool. And the art is cool and all that. But
the play it'll see is really boring.
It is, yeah. Okay, so 1 in a black. Legendary artifact type Infinity Stone. It has indestructible. Tap and add a black. So 2 mana, mana rock, add a colored mana right off the bat. And then it has this ability, 6 and a black, tap, exile a creature you control to harness it. And this just means if it's harnessed, then you get this passive ability, and it's at the beginning of your upkeep, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. So I think what's going to happen with this card is if you have a lot of black mana requirements in your deck, you might just put it in your deck because it's kind of nice to have a little ramp thing on turn 2. Because it's legendary, you don't really want to risk having a ton of them, I don't think. But just a mana rock that has this expensive buyout that does something kind of powerful in games that go really long or what have you makes me think it's just going to see quite a bit of play.
Yeah, me too. You know, it reminds me a lot of the Iron Crag, but I think, you know, tapping for colorless is kind of bad, and in a black deck, tapping for black is actually pretty good.
Am I playing with the Iron Crag a little bit? Indexed with Ugin has reminded me that sort of effect is still pretty good, and I think that's why they put it at legendary. But yeah, tapping for colorless is way worse than tapping for a color for spells you want to cast.
And indestructible here is an
ability
not irrelevant. I mean, obviously it'll still die to some things like Pinnacle Starcade, or it could get into the Flood mod, but you know, it is eventually leading up to, you know, this ability that you might want to activate, which also that ability, the 7 mana and tap it, is an instant speed ability, so you can like block Trump with a creature and exile that, or just, you know, wait till your opponent's end step to make sure that's actually what you want to do.
Yeah, good point.
So
yeah, and again, the floor is just so low that,
yeah, exactly,
it's pretty nice that it's got this end game thing going on.
And mana rocks have some pretty high like diminishing returns too, so it's kind of this weird thing, you know, where even if it wasn't legendary, I mean, there'd probably be decks that'd want to play four, but I think a lot of the times, you know, it's a new thing for deck building with legendary cards like this, but even some decks I've looked at recently, I've thought about just like wanting a mana rock, but not necessarily being like a deck that always wants to draw a bunch of mana rocks. But, you know, if you happen to draw that one mana rock you put in your deck, you're probably going to be happy.
I do think it's going to be kind of fun to be like, oh, I could put a Soulstone in this deck, and that's pretty interesting, especially on Arena. In paper, if you don't own a Soulstone, I think this is going to be a pretty expensive card because of Commander and Lore.
Yeah, maybe. That
might be pretty annoying.
Yeah, and then also, I guess, Mana Rock's a tap for colored mana. You know, I've played a lot with the Talismans in Modern. I'm in these, like, Eldrazi ramp type of decks. You know, it's easy to spend a single colored mana the turn you play it. It's a lot harder to do that with colorless. So, you know,
You can play one drops right away
and still
really
play
nice.
Something, and it only costs you one mana, or, you know, play it on turn four and still play something.
Yeah, it's kind of wild this doesn't enter tapped or something, actually.
Yeah.
You can play it and then play a removal spell or something. Yeah, it's pretty pushed card. I'm not surprised given that it's the Soulstone. Yeah, so that's my four, that's your three, so I guess I'll do my three. Getting some more Spider-Man on here. Well,
I've got my number four.
Oh, right. Yeah, go for that. You do your number four.
I've got Spider-Ham Peter Porker, which is yet another Spider-Man in my book.
Does he give my cat +1/+1? I know it gives animals +1/+1. Okay.
One in a green, 2/2, legendary creature, spider boar hero. So spider pig, not Spider-Man, but I'm counting it. When Spider-Ham enters, create a food token, and then other spiders, boars, bats, bears, birds, cats, dogs, frogs, jackals, lizards, mice, otters, rabbits, raccoons, rats, squirrels, turtles, and wolves you control get +1/+1. So it's a lord for a long list of creature types. And when it enters, you get a little value because it's a food token. And I just think you might be able to build a deck that is almost entirely these creature types. Notably, a shortcut here is 10 of those creature types are the 10 main creature types from Bloomburrow.
Yeah.
They did include all of those.
Okay.
So pretty much not any, because I guess there's some really strong non-10 creature type cards from Bloomburrow, like the Sunspine Lynx, but that's even a cat though, I think, so perfect.
I like that it comes with a food token. A lot of cards that just sort of generate a lot of cardboard, for so cheap are pretty good. Yeah, what are you going to do with this Lord ability though?
Just find
a spot for it maybe?
Yeah, like just have a deck that seemingly is coincidentally all these creature types and... and then this guy fits right in.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure how to evaluate this one, I'm gonna be honest. So
also if there is a spider deck, then he's also a spider lord.
Okay.
And he's the right color for it. So pick it up with your red green Spider-Man, Ben Reilly.
Is this a good design or a bad design?
Probably just because of all the creature types and having them remember them.
Yeah.
You know, my initial reaction is that would be bad, but I just think if you were, like, actually keeping this card in mind, like, it's just going to be pretty obvious to you.
Is it an animal?
Yeah, like...
Basically?
Yeah, you'll know right away. Anytime you put some weird animal in your deck, you'll be like, is this one of the ones that Spider-Ham pumps? And you'll just... It's not, like, hard to parse it.
It's, like, almost always yes.
The only weird thing is it goes spiders, and then the rest are in alphabetical order.
That is weird.
But they probably figured spider was the most important one.
Animal Mayhem. What do you think makes them decide to put this like little flavor text on the ability?
I don't know. Maybe it's something the characters say in the comics. Like it just might be a bit more iconic than we're giving it credit for.
Uh-huh. They don't put it in front of like every ability, but maybe for the legendaries they do?
Yeah, it's on a lot of them.
It is, isn't it? Okay.
All right. What was your number three?
All right. My number three is Peter Parker.
Okay.
Slash, what's he flipping to? Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay.
So one and a white for a 0/1 creature. When he enters, you create a 2/1 green spider token with reach. And then he has transform for one and then green, white, blue. So four mana. Or you could cast them for that four mana. The backside is 4/4 vigilance reach. Each legendary spell you cast that's one or more colors has web slinging for Bant, green, white, blue. Yeah, my, you know, my observation of cards like this, where they're cheap and they come with two pieces of cardboard, basically, is that they're usually pretty good. And this one, if you're, like, blinking it and stuff, the token is, like, the strong part of the card. So getting 2/1 spiders, if you're bouncing this card, seems pretty good. Backside is maybe a little weak. I actually can't tell. Seems like you could probably do something cool with this, but I'll admit I haven't thought of anything in particular.
Yeah, I guess there's also multiple spiders in one card sometimes. So it
if you transform
matter.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's also kind of interesting to pick it up with web slinging. That's maybe something in mind here.
You could pick it up
with some other web slinging.
There's so many legendary creatures nowadays.
But also, it's kind of hard to tap a 0/1 without help and have it survive combat. So maybe that's not even true.
Yeah, there's. Maybe some Edge of Eternity's cards can help you.
That's true. Yeah. You can station even though it has zero power.
Zero power.
I guess it's yeah. Two bodies for the Lumen class Frigate, and it immediately stations it to the Anthem.
Yeah. There's... It doesn't sound that crazy to me to play that. The green 1/2 that taps a permanent to add a...
Yeah, Gene Uber. Pollinator. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
Pretty good with that card. So, yeah, I like this card. I'm being too optimistic about the backside. If this card's not good, that's probably why I'm just reading it. Because the front side, you know, is like obviously pretty solid.
Yeah, but it does need help, right? Like you, I don't think.
Sure.
It's very Raise the Alarm-ish, and I'm, you know, there's been times that the one in the white literal creature that makes a 1/1 has seen play. I'm not sure if distributing the stats like this is better, but the fact that you could flip it matters.
Yeah, the fact that, so if they kill the 2/1 reach, then you've got this thing you can flip. And I like that it's got reach. Seems nice, 2/1.
That is nice.
Like this, compared to Spectacular Spider-Man, pretty different card, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of good against Spectacular Spider-Man, though.
Gotcha.
Spider-Man beats Spider-Man again.
Yep.
That'll be the classic. Story of draft.
These guys are the same, though, right? This is like... the same universe Spider-Man. Like this is definitely Peter Parker in Spectacular Spider-Man.
I think so.
Okay. Solid. Yeah. All right. Your All go. Right.
My number two is Miles Morales, which is another flip card and also a Spider-Man from a different universe. One in the green. For a 1/2 legendary creature, human citizens hero. When Miles Morales enters, put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to two target creatures. And then 3 red, green, white, transform Miles Morales, activate only as a sorcery, or you can cast it for that much on the backside for Ultimate Spider-Man, which is a 4/3, first strike haste, camouflage, 2 generic mana, put a +1/+1 counter on Ultimate Spider-Man, he gains hexproof and becomes colorless until end of turn. Whenever you attack, double the number of each kind of counter on each Spider-Man legendary creature you control. So this one, I think the front half is like really pushed. If you have a 1-drop and you play this, it can target itself. That's, you know, 2 mana for 3 power and 4 toughness, which is
like
pretty impressive
card.
To me.
And yeah. It's not on my list. I don't know what I'm doing, but I took it off last minute because I read the back and I was like, the back's bad.
Yeah, but it's a really strong 2-drop if you're playing 1-drops.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, I like that a lot of these expensively costed transform cards on the back, they seem to have haste at least. And, like, they're not a card you would put in your deck if they didn't have the front side. But I don't think they're going to be totally embarrassing either when you get to the stage of the game where you have 6
mana. It is funny how a lot of them have haste. I wonder why that is.
Spider-Man's fast.
Yeah, okay. Fair.
4/3 first strike haste, also kind of hard to block. Has a protection ability. You get the attack ability immediately. If you flip, you know, if it targeted itself when this entered, it's going to maintain that counter when you flip it. Tifa, a card that might enjoy getting counters and also might be able to ramp into this mana cost. That's maybe some sort of deck there. The Landfall deck maybe could end up splashing the 2 flip colors here.
Yeah, I for Edge of Eternities, I feel like I ranked these kind of +1/+1 synergy cards too high, but this fits nicely with some of the cards from that set too.
Yeah. And then, you know, yeah, that deck also already has one drops with Llanowar Elf and Chocobo. And I don't, you know, I don't think it's embarrassing to play a Llanowar Elf and play this and attack for two and have a 2/3 and a 2/2.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds pretty decent, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like this card. Why is it not on my list? Who knows?
That's how I kind of felt about your Gwen Stacy, to be fair. It happens.
Okay, so... All
right, do we have the same number one? Because we haven't said it yet.
I think so. I think we have the same number one, yeah. So my number two, I kind of like these... We're on my number two, right?
Okay, sorry. I thought that was... I skipped one. I thought that was Peter Parker, but you have a different one, clearly.
Yeah, I have a different number two. Okay. My three was Peter Parker.
Cool.
So... I kind of like some of these Mayhem cards, and I was trying to pick which one I thought... It's funny, because a lot of them want to play together.
Yeah.
I was trying to pick which one I thought was, like, the most important slash impactful, and I went with Oscorp Industries.
Okay.
The land.
Yep, super cool.
And this land enters tapped, makes Grixis mana. It has Mayhem, which says, you may play this card from your graveyard if you discarded it this turn. Timing rules still apply. And if it enters from a graveyard, you lose two life.
What do you think of Mayhem? It's a mechanic. Do you like it more or less than Madness?
It's a little less fun, but it's a little cleaner, I think.
Yeah, I was thinking about how it's a little bit more hate. Like, you know, Mayhem doesn't work against Rest in Peace at all, for example, which I feel like is a little bit more intuitive, maybe.
Right.
That's worse, obviously, but
it is definitely worse. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess if you had a whole deck built around Mayhem, Rest in Peace would be pretty good against you, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, this card is nice because it's just this like really easy way to just have a way to get card advantage off of your cards that are discarding.
Yeah.
So that's why I picked this one. I'm not even sure these decks would be Grixis, but I guess even if they were just black red, they would probably still play this.
Yeah, I could see it. Maybe a couple. It's hard to put in four tap lands if you're a bit more aggressively slanted, but yeah, just to increase the Mayhem count for some 2-for-1s, I agree.
Yeah, and then of all the cards that could maybe see play outside of a non-dedicated Mayhem deck, I thought maybe this was probably the most likely.
That makes sense, yeah. Might have a different home.
If like you just happen to have a deck that discards a lot of cards, like maybe you have to consider this, I think.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. I'm trying to wrestle a cat at the moment. That's why I'm talking so slowly. Yeah, pretty cool card, right?
Yeah.
What do you got for your number two?
No, sorry, I skipped. My number three was Soulstone. My number two is Miles Morales.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, so that's where we got.
Okay, so on to number one, huh?
Yeah.
All right, let's see if it's the same.
All right.
Number one, I have Sandman Shifting Scoundrel.
Oh, wow, I don't have that. Okay, that was when I cut. Oh, cool.
Well, nice.
Go ahead and read it, yeah.
Okay. One green, star legendary creature. Sandman's power and toughness are each equal to the number of lands you control. Sandman can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. 3 green, return this card and target land card from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. So 3 mana, star equal to your lands. Always going to be a pretty big creature. It does have a little bit of evasion, which is nice when you just have a big dumb idiot. And then, of course, the big selling point here is... it can come out of your graveyard. You have to have a land in your graveyard to do this.
Yeah.
But when it comes back, you do get a land. So kind of a lot of card advantage. It is just a big dumb creature, but like late in the game when you're paying 5, I think that's going to be pretty good. You obviously want to play it in a deck probably with like self mill. Maybe you could consider Fabled Passage or other fetch lands in older formats. But yeah, this card just seems really strong to me.
I guess to be fair, so I definitely knocked it down a lot and off my list because of the mandatory need for a land in your graveyard. But I guess Fabled Passage is a really kind of easy one to include that when it works, like none of these things have finality counters. So like if your opponent's plan is only to destroy this, you're just going to sack your Fabled Passage and bring them both back again.
Yeah. So if they don't have any way to exile, it's just you're always going to have this giant creature bring back every turn.
Certainly is unique that, like I guess there is a clean kind of card to pair with this card that will kind of always work at least. You'll probably want more than just 4 Fabled Passages to want to play this card. You'll probably want to be a bit dedicated to it, and self-mill definitely sounds like a great way of doing that because you'll also just mill Sandman, which sounds awesome.
Yeah, even if you just have a couple, like if your deck isn't totally self-mill, but you find... to play some self-mill cards. That's obviously excellent because you can get it for free.
Yeah.
I would say of all the cards, I mean, I'm not surprised because it's my number one. Of all the cards, I'm a little surprised this one is on wasn't on your list somewhere because it seems really good to me.
It was one I didn't read as an honorable mention. That's how close it was.
Okay. Okay. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. So your number one is one I don't have either.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It's
okay, what do you got?
I have School Days.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dude, I hope you're right.
Yeah, I know. I thought this was also just like, I really enjoy that this card exists.
It's cool.
Yeah, so School Days, three blue.
Okay, go ahead, sorry.
Instant,
I'm sorry.
Choose one, do homework, draw three cards, or fight crime, counter target spell, draw a card. I also love the names there.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And, you know, so this is an upgraded Jace's Ingenuity, and shout out to just, like, the design of this. I learned in Discord that my friend Ben Weitz was behind this card, who works for Wizards. And yeah, I mean, Jace's Ingenuity
is
not a card that would see play in Standard at all, I think. It might even be Standard legal in Foundations or something. But, you know,
right.
Miss, which is the mode of counter target spell draw card, is not something you'd pay five for, but I just think the combination of these, you know, me as a, I guess the way I play against control decks, a card like this is really uniquely powerful because when my opponent passes with mana, I'm thinking about, can they do something besides counter my spell? Like, if so, then I might want to, you know, play something powerful because if they counter it, that's just a one for one. Or, you know, should I just pass and hope that they can't use their mana on anything good? But, you know, when you pass with this, I don't think you can play four copies in your control decks, but I just think, you know, maybe a couple, because I think it's going to put your opponent in just a tough bind when you pass with this a lot of the time.
Chase's Ingenuity. You know, I watched recently a YouTube video of players. There was one point where Owen Turtenwald, Andrew Cuneo, Gab Nassif, another older pro player that I know works for Wizards now that I can't think of his name, they all played this blue-black control deck during like Khan's Standard.
Yeah, probably Andrew Brown is who you're thinking of. He's like the head of play design, and he won a Grand Prix with that deck.
Yeah, him too. That's actually not who I'm thinking of. Okay. It was the one who was Owen Turtenwald's friend. I think they were roommates for a while.
Okay.
Like an older pro. Anyways.
Brock Parker or something? I don't know.
Who?
Brock Parker comes to mind, Vegas.
No.
Guy,
but yeah. he's really good friends with Reed Duke. Remember him, Reed and Owen used to be do a lot of team GPs.
Oh, you mean Huey Jensen.
Okay. Huey Jensen. Got yeah, it. Yeah, yeah. Okay. They all played this blue-black control deck with Jace's Ingenuity.
Yeah.
And I was watching some of their matches, and I think they did pretty decent with the deck, but funny enough, on their feature matches, like, they almost lost all the time to the point where the commentators were making a joke about that, about how they always lost when they came on camera. And Jace's Ingenuity did not seem very good in those games I was watching.
I'm definitely using that deck's existence as a reference point, like, mentally. But I guess to me, it's certainly the modality of it.
No, yeah, totally. So I think this has a chance. I agree. It's a little bit, my thought with it was, like, the control decks in Standard, their biggest problem is they're already kind of clunky, and their biggest strength is that they already have good card drawing.
That's
between
fair.
Stock
yeah.
up and consult.
In my mind, like, now I'm just never going to play three steps ahead. I'm just going to, like,
I know, right?
This is the card I want three steps ahead to be. You know, like, I want to pass with five mana and just guarantee that, like, something good is going to go my way, as long as I wasn't already horribly behind on board, you know. But, like, if you have the board handled and you pass with this, you're just going to be so feeling like you're in charge.
Yeah. It is kind of nice that, like, against decks where you want to counterspell, it's still a counterspell, and then against decks where counterspells are terrible, it just plays as your kind of win condition, where you trade cards and then use it.
No, it's also like, you know, you play against these aggressive, low-to-the-ground decks as these control decks, and, like, they usually sideboard weird cards that, like, you might need to counterspell later in the games, or even just, you know, burn spells, and it's kind of nice that this, even though it's expensive, can maybe cover you from that. You know, if you're already at the point in the game where you, like, have a threat in play and you just need to, like, not die to something really weird, but, like, you get to keep it in your deck against an aggro deck because it's still, like you said, your win condition to just have card advantage.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you're right. It's a sweet card. I have a hard time believing control decks would play more than, like, one, but maybe.
That's fair.
Yeah. Okay, so that'll do it for this episode, folks. Thanks for listening. Maybe leave a comment in the YouTube channel or on Patreon if you think we missed a card or are horribly overrating a card. it'll be interesting to hear. Everyone always has different sorts of opinions with these. You'd think it'd be people would narrow it down on the best cards easier, but mostly because after a few weeks it becomes kind of obvious. But playing with the cards makes a huge difference, so it makes sense.
Definitely.
Yeah, so we'll see you next time, folks.
So today, we had some
bit of news. Ban announcement or what?
Not quite. I mean, I guess it's in the category of it. Carmen Klomperens, who works for Wizards, wrote kind of a little article about what's going on with Standard, because they obviously recognize there's some problems. Spotlight series was completely dominated by two decks. Apparently, Mono Red and Izzet Cauldron both had above 60% win rates, and no other deck had above a 47.2% win rate, from what I can tell.
Also, most people kind of predicted that.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much the Mono Red winning, but that's not surprising, I would say.
Yeah, and this article included some of their own internal data, which was interesting to me. I guess I'll start with kind of what they're pointing at here, which is that they're moving up the scheduled ban announcement a little bit, but they're still kind of keeping it within this RC/RCQ season, as far as I can tell. So that's not going to get anything banned from it. And they kind of justify that, and it makes sense. They really value that, you know, people say, I'm going to buy Izzet Cauldron, and I'm going to play my RCQ season with it, and they're going to let them do that. And I think that's fair, you know?
I do also. I have something else that I would do instead, which is I feel like they should just announce the ban and then just have the date be whenever they want.
Yeah, it is.
So people at least know.
We believe it'll likely take action in November, and they list that VV probably needs to go. They're unsure about Soul Cauldron.
Yeah, I just hate this like announcement of an announcement thing, you know?
Yeah, but they also kind of add a mention that this might not happen, and they bring up some arena data. And one thing I like that they point out is that on arena, you don't really see this with Cauldron. I mean, the win rate is probably still there, but the popularity of it is not there at all. And I don't know if you felt that way playing arena, but I certainly do. People like to play the decks. They want to play for fun, even in High Mythic. You'll play against a brute. Shahar streams the craziest decks, and he's rank one sometimes.
Yeah, you know, like, and people just play his decks against him.
Yeah, exactly. So that's cool. Yeah. You know, people are engaging with arena kind of from a place of fun, more so than absolutely needing. You know, you don't get anything besides some qualifier weekend invites for doing well in High Mythic. So obviously the incentives aren't super high, but I'm glad that people don't take it, you know, to caring so much about rank one that they only play BV Cauldron once you hit Mythic or things like that. Second of all, Carmen mentions that Mono Red is kind of rebalancing the scales, and it actually is more played than BV Cauldron on Arena, apparently, and has a higher win rate.
That's interesting.
It's funny how they
release this sort of data for people to look at.
Not exactly the specifics, but... Certainly an interesting anecdote. But they're just kind of mentioning that Mono Red might warp the form. You know, if Mono Red, what's surprising to me is, you know, I see Mono Red has this high win rate from the Spotlight series, and I think, oh, because it's good. It's demonstrating that it's actually good against Cauldron. It's a counter to it, and Cauldron is a huge portion of the field. But, you know, it was only 30% of the field, so potentially, you know, it's different with the winners by the game, but around 70% of these Mono Red players' opponents weren't playing Cauldron, and they still sported a really high win rate. So it certainly is demonstrating that the deck is kind of still powerful. And that's a deck that, you know, if it becomes really popular because it's cheap or people think they're going to ban VV, that's a deck that I see having a lot of counterplay to.
Well, yeah, definitely. Beza or...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Lightning Helix, all sorts of things. Flash Freeze. Let's see. So the data is interesting that they said in this article, I guess, because one of the things I was thinking about when Mono Red won was maybe the Cauldron decks were just so focused on the mirror that they didn't have enough Torch at the Towers and whatnot. But if they're still trying to beat Mono Red and are still a dog to it, I mean, that's interesting.
Yeah, and that hasn't proven itself to me yet. That's
no,
a great point.
I agree.
I think the point that more so, like I mentioned, has been demonstrated to me is it seems like Mono Red is, in fact, good against other decks, not just one deck. So
Yeah. No, the mono red cards are still pretty strong. I mean, they banned a couple of the best ones, but
yeah,
they've got good ones still. Yeah, I guess I bet that's what they'll be looking at to see if Cauldron could just adapt and go back to the number one spot. Do you think, like, do you think if mono red becomes kind of one of the, if it's just a fight between mono red and Cauldron, that's enough of a reason not to ban something?
No, certainly not. The meta would have to shift in a way where, like, mono red is more popular than Cauldron, and then people actually successfully attack the mono red deck, which I think is kind of the frustrating thing about the BB Cauldron deck, is successfully attacking it, I think, is just, like, not done with reactive cards. It's done with something like mono red, where, like, you play these cards that are good against a part of their deck, but their deck is really proactive, has Into the Flood Maw, which is a really efficient way to bounce, you know, more prison style cards against. And then, you know, I played the 20k RCQ and played against a Yuna deck, and they played a High Noon when I already had two Marauding Makos in play, and I just played three Steam Core Scholars in a row and did not care about the High Noon at all, and just stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, it's a really good aggro deck just at its core.
Yeah, and in fact, that draw, you know, profs also would have beaten Rest in Peace exactly the same way, you know, which a unit deck wouldn't play. But that, to my point, it does a lot of different things in that deck.
Yeah. One of the one of the ways that people were countering the Cauldron deck is, I think people noticed that blue-white control or control-ish decks were pretty good against it. But since they've gotten Quantum Riddler, that's like a pretty nice sideboard card to have against control decks.
Yeah.
So that's definitely helped that deck too.
Yeah, they're evolving themselves to be a stronger and stronger deck each week, even now. You know, I see people winning the game with Wild Riding their Quantum Riddler and stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. It's crazy how there's been so many options in... it's crazy that they banned almost predominantly blue and red cards, and blue and red cards are still the top of the metagame at the moment.
It is very weird.
Yeah, I wish they would just have already decided what they're banning and then just say, oh, we're going to ban Cauldron and it's going to take effect in 1 month so we don't mess up RCQ season. But
hopefully,
whatever,
good news for me if I qualify for Worlds, that Standard will get shaken up a little bit like a month before.
Oh, please God, yeah.
I don't know what the original ban announcement was, but it might have been right after Worlds for all I know. I think it was sometime in December, so.
Yikes. Yeah.
Oh, no, it was November 24th. It's just 2 weeks, so it was always going to happen, but I guess better news that I have a bit more time to prepare for a shaken up Standard format, if that's the case.
I guess looking at this article, I'm a little surprised that they're leaning so heavily towards banning Vivi. I thought for sure they would just do Cauldron, but
I would prefer more than just those, if I'm being honest. Think Profs is just...
Yeah, Profs ridiculous, dude. Up. Like, can we just say we messed up with two mana permanents that replace themselves and are hard to remove and generate value all game? it's just too much.
I don't know, you know, I played a lot of the Teamer Prowess deck that I had mentioned that played before VBs but played zero Cauldrons and zero Profs at certain points, so I recognize that VB is a powerful enough card. It's tough because you just get in these spots where, like, people really hate VB and they're really vocal about it now, but also, like, at the same time, I know a lot of these really vocal players are just like, they're playing Commander. They haven't played a game of Standard. They're just complaining.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like Vivi, and it's obviously really good, but it's kind of fun to play against because you feel like you can do something against it, you know? Where, like, if you're prepared, you can beat it. And maybe you can't, but it at least makes you feel like you can. I feel like it's a decently designed card. It's just with Cauldron, it's so messed up.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if the black removal was a little better positioned, that... I don't think VB by itself is like a non-answerable Standard card. You know, I don't think it's exchange versus your opponent playing with Doomblades is actually that bad for the Doomblade player. It's probably good for them a lot of the time.
No, especially since, I mean, it's three mana, so a lot of time your opponent just has to run it out on turn three.
Yeah, it just sucks because, like, the Doomblades suck.
They do, yeah.
I've wondered, you know, if they printed a two mana Swords to Plowshare, would that be format breaking? I'm not sure it would be. And certainly if it said destroy instead of exile, I don't think it would be a problem.
Oh no, not if it said destroy. Yeah. Maybe if it was white. Yeah.
Just one white destroyed target creature, its controller gains life because of its power. I think that would be like an appropriate power level
maybe.
Card.
Maybe. Yeah, but I always thought like even Counterspell wouldn't be too crazy as long as it cast, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Counterspell is a card I try to scold people to not play in modern and people. people were really excited by the time it came out, but it's...
came out a little too late. It needed to come out when people were playing Logic Knot, although obviously
Logic Knot's pretty strong. Yeah, when that was actually true.